Welcome to the podcast of Christ Church Manchester. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit our website at www.ccm.org.uk.
Good morning. So as Joe said, my name is Tom. I'm part of the team that leads Christ Church Manchester. When I think about my favourite Bible stories, I bet you all have favourite Bible stories. Don't you? Mine tend to be the stories of risk. Okay, I love it when there's a bit of risk going on, when someone steps out and has a bit of an adventure and it's just, let's see what God is going to do here. So, for example, the story of Esther. I love the story of Esther. Esther was the queen. She was one of God's people in a foreign land, but she had this position as the queen. And the prime minister of the day had manipulated the king into giving this order to kill all of God's people. Esther was the only one who could do anything about it. She, out of all God's people, was the only one with any kind of access to the king. But there was a problem, because she hadn't been called for by the king for ages. And you can't just barge in on the king. That would be taking your life into your hands. But she takes some advice, she thinks about it, she fasts, she prays. And in the end, she decides she's going to do it. She's going to risk her very life. And her words were these: "I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." Another of my favourite stories is Jonathan and his armour bearer. So the people are losing a war. They're all hiding in caves, completely under the cosh, totally subdued, utterly defeated. And it was in this setting that Jonathan, who was the crown prince, he turns to the young guy carrying his armour and he says, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us." So the two of them cross over. They end up turning the tide of the whole war. Or when threatened with a fiery furnace, you've got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their words were, "Our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up." Or surrounded by two enemy armies, you've got Joab, who turned to his brother and he said, "Be of good courage. Let us be courageous for our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what seems good to him." All of these stories are linked because they're stories of people setting out in faith and having a go, even though they didn't know how things would play out. Maybe that's what draws me to them. Maybe that's why I find them inspiring stories. I think faith is a funny old thing, you know. Okay, have you ever thought about faith? It's kind of weird, isn't it? Because on the one hand, when you're talking faith, it's dealing with certainty. It's about being sure of some things. Okay, Hebrews 11 verse 1 defines faith as the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. But on the other hand, faith is a bit risky, isn't it? It's dealing with the uncertain and when you don't know. So it's kind of like you're stepping out on what God has said and you have no clue what's going to happen. You know the end destination, God's promised that, but all these steps along the way feel really risky. Okay, you don't know if God, well, you know God can, but you don't know how God is going to use these things to get you to there. All feels like a bit of a risk. And that's the idea, really, that we're getting at here at Christ Church Manchester when we talk about a have-a-go culture. I don't know if you've heard that phrase spoken here, have-a-go culture. It's this idea that we'll step out, we'll try things, we'll do stuff, knowing that God has promised to build his kingdom and bring about his purposes. But we're trusting that somehow he will use these things that we do to bring about that future that he has promised. Some of you were here last week. If you were, you'll have heard Tim kick off a brand new series where we're talking about the culture of Christ Church Manchester. And Tim spoke about our second chance culture. And what we really mean when we talk about the culture of the church is how things are around here, how we tend to do things in this church. Sam Chand explained it this way. He said, "Culture is the atmosphere in which the church functions. It's the prevalent attitude. It is the collage of spoken and unspoken messages. The strongest force in an organisation isn't vision or strategy, it's the culture which holds all the other components." So these things we're talking about, these points of culture, they should not come as a surprise to you. Okay? If you've been around a little while, then you will have experienced these things. Actually, this idea of have a go, when I say that, you'll be thinking, yeah, we always are actually starting new stuff and trying new things. And the idea of the series is just to flesh them out a bit, explain what is behind them and bring us all together on this journey. And the way we're doing it is we'll look at the parables of Jesus, because he taught the same principles. So today, as we look at the second point of culture, have a go culture, we're going to read the parable of the talents. And you can find this in Matthew chapter 25 from verse 14, or I've got it displayed on the screen as well if you prefer to follow along there. Matthew 25 verse 14. For it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents, but here I've made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had the 2 talents, came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had received the 1 talent, came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown, and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him, and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will be given, to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. There is a lot in this parable that we could draw out this morning. When the American pastor Rick Warren wrote about this parable, he identified 7 principles from it of how to invest your life. And I want us to take a look this morning at those 7 principles. I think it'll be really helpful for us as we think about the have a go culture. And principle number 1 is that everything that we have belongs to God. Okay, that's really important. Right at the start of the story, we read about the man who was going on a journey. So he called his servants to him and he entrusted to them his property. Okay, so they had the property, but it was all given to them by the master. And it ultimately belonged to the master. Okay, it was his. And the same is true of us. Okay, we all have possessions. We all have things. We all have stuff in our house, money, whatever we have. It's important we remember that it all comes from God. Okay, every single thing you have comes from God. Your wealth is from God. Your possessions are from God. Your health, your abilities, everything you have comes from God. And so it's all meant to be used for his purposes. We're just the stewards of it. Ultimately, it belongs to him. I think remembering this right from the offset gets our heart in the right place. Before we even start talking about how we're using it, let's get our heart right, remember it's from God. And that gives us an attitude of humility, actually. It's about him, it's for him. This is kind of his mission, his world. Okay, so we get an attitude of humility and we get an attitude of gratitude. We're grateful and thankful for all the things that he has entrusted to us. So number 1 is that everything we have belongs to God. Number two, this is our second principle, is that God has given us some talents. Okay? So the man taking the journey who trusted this property to the servants, he kind of lined them up, and there were three of them that are mentioned. One of them is given five talents, one is given two talents, and one is given one talent, each according to his ability. Now, don't think talent the way we use the word talent, okay? Actually, in those days, a talent was basically some money, okay? So this master has given each of the people different amounts of money, and it was a measure of weight. So he'd have weighed out different amounts of money for these three servants. And it was really valuable, actually. A talent, they reckon, was worth about 20 years' wages, okay? Think how much money you'd earn in 20 years. That's what one of these talents was. So we're talking several hundred thousand pound is what these people would have been given. Not small amounts of money. So that's what they were in the story. But I think this story is challenging us to look at our own lives and ask the question, what is it that God has given me that I could put to use? Okay? What has God given me that I could put to use? Okay? And it isn't just about money and possessions. That is part of it. Okay, so your money, your possessions, yes, they are from God and to be used. But also think a bit creative with it. Okay, what skills has God given you? What abilities? Or maybe actually when you look at your week, you're like, actually, I've got these blocks of free time. Okay, there's some time there that I could use. Or maybe you've got a home that you can invite other people into. Maybe you've got relationships or influence into a particular social group of people. Or maybe you've just got an idea that's been nagging away in your head that you kind of know God has planted in there. God has given each of us some talents to use. And when I look at this bit of the story, there are two things that I notice that I think are really important. Okay, the first thing is that everybody is given something. Okay? There is no such thing as a zero talent person. You've got five, you've got two, you've got one. All of them are given something. I believe God has given things to each one of us to use. Okay, if you're sitting there thinking, no, he hasn't given anything to me, I believe he has. I think God has made you unique. Okay, he's given you specific gifts, okay, specific skills, specific resources, specific opportunities that you have that no one else in this room has. Okay, God has given you unique things to use. So everybody is given something, but the second thing to notice is this: not everybody is given the same thing. Okay, it can be tempting, I think, to play a bit of a comparison game. Okay, do you ever do this? Do you ever look at kind of people who are maybe at a different season of life to you and kind of compare and think, oh yeah, well that person can do all this stuff because look at what they've been given. They've got so much kind of free time. They can invest loads. Or you might think, no, they're loaded. They've got loads of money. Think of all the difference they can make. And you look at what other people have been given rather than what you have. I mean, right now, you may be in a season of life where your time and energy are just zapped, okay, for whatever reason, and you feel like you don't have much to give. That's okay, don't worry about what you don't have to give, okay? Worry about the bit that you do have to give and think about what you can do with that instead, okay? So everything is from God. We're each given talents. Principle number three, God expects us to use those talents. Okay, these principles aren't really rocket science, but they are helpful. In verse 19, we're told that after a long time, the master returned to those servants who he'd entrusted the money to, and he wanted to settle accounts with them. Okay? His clear expectation was that they would have put what they'd been given to use and done something with it. So as we're thinking about the talents that we have, on the last principle, all the things we were considering, what has God given you? The next question we need to ask is, well, what are we doing with those things? How are we putting them to use for God? It's kind of like the Esther thing that we started with. So what Esther had been given was access to the king. That was kind of her unique thing that she had that nobody else had. And she was able to put that to use and save a lot of lives. And this is what drives the have-a-go culture at Christ Church Manchester. If you've been around more than a week, you've probably noticed we're always trying to pioneer new sites and new churches. It's one of the things that we do. We're gearing up to launch the city centre in February. We're already starting to make plans for Levensum Long Site after that. In fact, when we planted this site early last year, the question that we got asked most was, I get that you're doing Kingsway. Where are you going after that? Okay, and this attitude of have a go is seeping into the culture of the church. It's about putting our talents to use, trying to start new things, do new initiatives. But it's not just corporately that we need to put our talents to use. It's something we should all be looking to do individually as well. And as a church, we want to make that as easy as possible for you to do. Okay? We want to make it easy for you to put your talents to work. And really, there are two ways that we try to make it easy. The first is that we want to make it easy for you to have opportunities to do things. So we look at the story of Jesus with his disciples, and he'd only been on the road with them for a few months, and then he sent them out and said, right, you've seen me do it, you've seen me preach, you've seen me heal the sick, it's your turn, two by two into the villages. And quickly he gave them an opportunity to put into practice what they'd been learning. We want to build something of that into how we do the church. Over the last couple of years, we've had about 60 people come through our preaching course. Probably about half of them have had a chance to preach in church. We invest in young worship leaders. Colin even asked a couple of students to kick off the first stage of our latest church plan. It's easy to get an opportunity. In fact, one of my favourite CCM stories over the last year, I was talking to a 20-year-old girl called Grace, who's part of CCM City. She was telling me how she'd been for a meeting with a bunch of people from other churches one Sunday afternoon. And as they were chatting, Grace happened to mention that she'd led the communion bit of the service that morning. Okay, another guy in the meeting was called Johnny. He's also part of CCM. He mentioned how he'd anchored the meeting that morning. And apparently there was kind of just a slight bit of silence in the room. And then someone piped up with, wow, does your church just let anyone do stuff? I think they've kind of hit on something really precious about our church, actually. I mean, it's not just that anyone can do stuff. Character's important. Having a bit of gifting or potential does matter. But we really do want to make a point of making it easy, not hard, for people to have a go and put their talent to use. So we'll try to provide a lot of opportunities. And the second thing we want to do, actually, is provide a lot of training as well, because a have-a-go culture isn't just about throwing people in at the deep end and saying, okay, you have a go, but you're on your own. So when Jesus sent his disciples out to the villages, he then gathered them back in and said, right, let's talk about it. Let's discuss how it went. And he provided more input and more coaching. So you heard Joe mention earlier about the School of Leadership. That's one bit of training that we want to offer. It'll be beneficial to some of you, I'm sure. In January, we're launching a School of Theology. That might be useful for some of you. I mentioned the preaching course a minute ago. We've got gospel conversation training that will help equip you for evangelism. We run songwriting workshops for those who are musically inclined. We've set up a gap year program, an internship year. We're committed to training people and giving people opportunities. Why? Because we want to help you to use the talents that you've been given. And so that's number three. The fourth principle from this parable is that it is wrong to bury what God has given us. So out of the three servants who'd been given the money, only two of them actually did what they were supposed to do and put it to use. The other one just sat on it. Okay, he didn't lose the money. He didn't lose it, but he didn't do anything with it. And the master is not impressed at all. We can't just sit on what we've been given. We need to have a go at putting it to use. Being overcautious, being over-conservative is actually an enemy of faith. The big story of the Bible is about God's purposes progressing in the world. Things move forward, and we need to use what we have to be part of that. What I know is that the Bible story starts in a garden, but it ends in a glorious mega city. The place of God's presence expands over the whole earth. Stepping out, being active, and risking is part of faith. I mentioned that these principles come from something I read by Rick Warren. I'd like to just quote him on this one because he's a bit challenging. He says, we cannot please God by playing it safe. We must take risks in life. Then he says this, I see dull Christians all the time. The fizz, the sparkle has gone out of their life. The Christian life is not a relationship anymore. It's a routine. There's no joy like there used to be. Their spiritual life has gone flat. Why? They're sitting on the sidelines. They're not in the game. They're spectating, but not participating. They have buried their talents. You get stretched when you're in the game, not sitting on the sidelines. That's good, isn't it? It's really good, really important. I wonder if you recognise any of that in yourself. We've been given talents. We're supposed to use them, not bury them. Okay, number five. Fear is what can keep us from using our talents. It's fear that can keep us from using our talents. It's interesting, the guy who doesn't put his talent to use, he actually gives us the explanation of what was going on in his heart. In verse 25, he says, I was afraid. He'd heard about the master. He knew what he was like. He was worried of losing this money. He was afraid, so he didn't do anything. I think fear is probably the biggest factor that holds us back from using what God has given us, and particularly fear of failure. Fear of failure is real, okay? It's one of the big challenges that confronts us as we step out and have a go. I think about the things that I'm doing, where I'm stepping out, and there's that knot in my stomach, and I do worry, like, what if this doesn't work? That will look, it'll look bad on me. I'll kind of be embarrassed. I want it to work. And there is that knot that I need to push through to have a go. I bet you all experience the same thing as well. But I want to contend this morning that we need to make friends with failure. Okay, we need to make friends with failure. I think it's like the Thomas Edison thing. You've probably heard about when he invented the light bulb. He tried 1,000 times before he got one that worked. But when he talks about it, you can see that in his head, he didn't see it as 1,000 failures. He actually said that the light bulb was a 1,000 step invention. Okay, I like that idea. It's 1,000 steps, but it gets you to where you're going. Looking at failure this way can help us to embrace a have-a-go culture. I was thinking this week about all the different sites we've had a go at planting at CCM over the years. And I made a list, okay? It's really interesting. Let me show you the list of all the CCM sites that we have tried. Okay, so we start with CCM East. It's still going, but it's not where it was. It's now Gorton. Then we start a city that's kind of doubled into two congregations. Gorton is still going. We tried Salford and Levensum. Neither of those are happening at the moment. Then we tried City South. That one did get off the ground but became Withington. CCM Withington is still there today. We had to go at Alderley Edge. Nothing happened there. Then we started Didsbury, which became West Didsbury, which became Kingsway. And then the city centre is the next one. And you might notice, as you look at that list, there are three different outcomes there that seem to have happened in roughly even numbers. We've got some that are still going strong as planned and that are doing well and have taken off. We've got some that don't exist anymore. And we've got some that are doing well, but are not what we expected. Okay, they've changed, they've pivoted, they've moved direction over the years. I believe we are where we are today because we've been willing to embrace a friendship with the idea that some stuff won't work and we have a go anyway. If we'd have only been willing to try things that we had a guarantee would work, I bet we'd probably still be just 50 people sitting in a room in Hyde, if that. We might have even kind of dwindled and died from there. The have a go culture has served us well. But I think it's served us well because of two important lessons we've learned along the way. Okay. The first of those lessons is that we've learned how to take big risks in low-risk ways. Okay, I'll say that again. We know how to take big risks in low-risk ways. So all of those sites there that are in grey, the ones that aren't currently going, that never got off the ground, we've managed to do them in a way so no one got hurt. Okay, it didn't kind of burn out people or do any damage to people. We didn't throw loads of resources at them along the way. They were things where if they'd have come off, they'd have been brilliant. And if they don't come off, hey, no harm done. It's kind of like dipping a toe in the water and seeing if anything is in it. And I think people often get risk averse because they picture the idea of risk as kind of throwing everything, betting the farm on one big risk, and the stakes are really high if it doesn't work. And so they say, oh no, we can't do that, it would be too damaging, so they don't do anything. But that's not really what have a go culture is all about. Have a go culture is more like be constantly, all the time, taking lots of small, low downside steps that accumulate and together build up to give you the big wins. We always want to be starting new things, but do it in a step-by-step way, building, progressing moving forward. So that's the first thing we've learned, how to take big risks in a low-risk way. The second thing that we've learned, this is really important, this one, the have-a-go culture needs the second-chance culture for it to work. Okay? The have-a-go culture needs the second-chance culture for it to work. Just imagine a have-a-go culture without a second-chance culture. That would be brutal, wouldn't it? That would be horrible. People would be thrust into the firing line and then spat out, yeah, have a go. Oh, no, that didn't work right. Nothing for you ever again. People would be broken. It wouldn't be a nice place to be. But when the two come together, it's beautiful, okay? Because it gives you space to step out, to try something, to put what you've got to use, and hey, if it doesn't work, no harm done. We love you. Let's figure out what we can do differently next time, and then let's go again. It's a safe place to have an adventure. Okay, principle number six, okay? If we don't use it, we will lose it. In the parable, the master actually takes the one talent away from the guy who didn't use it, and he gives it to the one who's already got 10. Actually, he's called wicked. There's a judgment going on. He's cast into the darkness. This is a sobering verse. Okay? But as I was thinking about it, I'm fully aware there's such a thing as a nominal Christianity. Okay, look around. People who tick a C of E on a census. People who may even go to church but show no fruit in their life. Going to church is not enough to get saved. Actually, part of having faith involves being faithful, demonstrating something of that faith in your life, bearing some fruit, putting your talent to work in some way, not just sitting on it. So if we don't use it, we will lose it. And then the complementary principle to this one is the last one. If we do use it, we will be rewarded. So the two servants who did put their talents to work, they were rewarded by the master. Okay? And there are three forms that the reward took. The first one was there was an affirmation. They get to hear these words, well done, good and faithful servant. I want to hear that. I want to hear that. Wouldn't it be mind-blowing? On the last day, you're standing before the throne of God and you hear the voice of God himself say to you, well done. Okay. I can't imagine being in the throne room of God and having it so him, God, is giving praise to me. Well done, good and faithful servant. It seems there is something of an affirmation on the faithful servants who put their talent to use. Second, there's more opportunity. Okay, they've done well with what they've got, so they get given more. He says, you've been faithful over a little, now I will set you over much. The opportunities that we will get depend on how faithful we are with what we have now. A small-scale example of this is a CCM City. Colin tells the story of how he first started to think of Dave and Emily as people who could lead the site. And basically, it's because they had a great community group going on. He looked at their community group. He saw loads of people wanted to go, that it was fun. It gathered people. And so because they'd been faithful in that thing, he started to think in terms of, oh, what more could we invite them to do? So there's the affirmation, there's more opportunity, and thirdly, there's a celebration. Okay, it says, enter into the joy of your master. God is a God of joy. As God's kingdom moves forward, as sinners repent, as broken lives are put back together again, there's a party going on in heaven. And guess who gets invited to that party? It's us as we put our talents to use. We're invited into the joy of the master. We're given our talents, we're meant to use them. And as we do, there's this affirmation, well done, good and faithful servant. There are then new opportunities for more responsibility, and we get invited to share the joy of the master. I recently heard someone talk about the subject of regret, and they explained there are two different types of regret. So one of them is the kind of regret where you try to do something and it doesn't work. Let's do an example. Okay, imagine you're single, you see someone and you really like them. You muster up the courage to tell them how you feel. It turns out they don't feel the same way. Okay, you feel a bit crushed, you feel a bit foolish, and something inside you is like, I wish I hadn't bothered bringing it up. Okay, that's one kind of regret. The other kind of regret is when you don't even try. So take the same example. You're single, there's someone you like, but instead of finding the courage to talk to them, you bottle it. You never have that conversation. You never know if they felt the same way that you feel or not. Then for the rest of your life, you're left with that question, what if? And you just wish you'd had the bravery to talk to them when you had the chance. Two kinds of regret. Which of those kinds of regret do you think is worse? Well, they've done some studies on it, and they showed conclusively that the regret from trying and failing actually sits quite shallow and passes quite quickly. But the regret from never even trying weighs deep, can live with people for the rest of their lives. And this is often the kind of regret that people will bring up on their deathbeds. Oh, if only I'd have done that when I had the chance. When I think about my life, when I think about all that God has given me, all the privilege, all the opportunity that is before me, I don't want to look back years from now and think, if only I'd have done something with it. If only I'd have stepped out. If only I'd have had a go. I want to put my talent to use and do something for God's kingdom with it. I'm going to end with this quote from Teddy Roosevelt. Some of you might have heard it before, but it is a belter. Okay. He said this. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, because there's no effort without error and shortcoming, who does actually try to do the deed, who knows great enthusiasm, the great devotion, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who at worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly. Far better it is to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checked by failure, than to rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy nor suffer much because they live in the grey twilight that knows neither victory nor defeat. Amen. So let's go and have a go.